your information to Ken or to Lauren, and then they do magic. They find music that's just right for what we're doing, and I really felt that tonight. Their music is just right for what we're going to talk about tonight. I drove back from Chicago this morning. I was at a writer's conference, so I woke up at 4:15 and came back, and it was really nice in the dark and in the quiet, and I listened to some podcasts. And I listened to a podcast that talked about dating and marriage and how people should communicate. And he said that probably one of the best questions to ask on a first date is, what's a little quirky about you? And what's a little quirky about me? Just kind of start there. Like, what's weird about us? And so I thought I'd tell you something weird about me to open up. When I was growing up, we were outside a lot, and we skinned our knees a lot. We stubbed our toes a lot. I think I was clumsy too, okay? So I felt like I was always getting hurt. And when I got hurt, the one question I never wanted to hear was, do you know what it is? What happened? I hated that question. Well, I got hurt. I don't want to chat about what happened. I just want you to comfort me right now. I don't know if other people are like that or not, but I wanted comfort. And I think sometimes we're that way with God, too. And what we want is comfort. And what we've created in our minds about God is this very standoffish image. And certainly there is wrong comfort. Could you imagine if, well, I had a son do a mini triathlon where you run and you bike and you swim. And it's a little painful to watch your kids do that. And what if I thought the best comfort I could give him was to take away his bike before he hopped on and just say, you know what, you've done enough. You're working too hard. Like, let me comfort you. Let's stop this craziness. That would have probably been wrong comfort, huh? Or what about a student that's in the midst of finals week? You know, if you're a parent or if you've been that student, could you imagine if somebody said, hey, you know what, that's just asking too much of you. Hey, just stop. Don't take that test. It's too much. So maybe that's wrong comfort. It was interesting, as I've been considering this idea of comfort, there are a few pastors that log in on this one, and this is what Tim Keller says. He says many good things, but he says this: the world values power, comfort, success, and recognition. Jesus frees us to value grief, sacrifice, weakness, and exclusion. Now, although those things are a part of our life, it's not really a good marketing technique, is it? Like that, I don't know. And Francis Chan, who I also like, he says, people are obsessed with Jesus. People who are obsessed with Jesus aren't consumed with their personal safety and comfort above all else. Obsessed people care more about God's kingdom coming to this earth than their own lives being shielded from pain or distress. And I get that, but I just want to talk tonight about comfort because God talks about comfort, and so does Scripture. I used some of this material for a retreat last week when I was in Arizona, and one of the women said, oh, when I saw that was the topic, I was not happy. I didn't want to talk about comfort. Like, really? That's like saying, I don't want to talk about dessert. I don't know. And as these women told their life stories, she needed a great deal of comfort. Like, she'd had a really hard life. And although she didn't want to talk about comfort, or she thought she was too tough to need comfort, I believe it's exactly what she needed. She needed comfort and rest. So you need to know yourself. And every message has a limited application, right? There are seasons. If I said, wear your coat, always wear your coat when you leave the house and put on your mittens and your hat, that is great for the winter, but that would be really a bad message for you in the summertime, wouldn't it? That would not work. If I said, don't touch, does that mean never touch anything? Or does that mean don't touch a hot stove? So we have messages for times and for seasons. And if this is a message that applies to your life today, great. Because I believe what most of us do is we push through our comfort zones. We wake up in the morning, most of us, to an alarm. And then we say, okay, I got to do what I don't want to do, which is get out of bed. And then you say, it's been a while since I've taken a shower. I've got to do another thing I don't want to do. I have to take a shower. And then you have another thing you don't want to do, which is answer the voices of crying children that got up before you. You know, and the day goes on and on and on with many things that we just push through our comfort zone on. I push through my comfort zone, and my husband does too, more than me, actually, in the wintertime when it's time to care for our animals outside. It is no fun when it's really cold to go out and throw hay. It's not a lot of fun when it's raining and nasty to go gather eggs and make sure that they have water and have feed. But we do those things because it's the right thing to do, even when it's not comfortable. The message that we've been given is do better, feel better, look better, and get better. Let's be bold, though, tonight. Let's talk about comfort and its goodness. The scriptures speak a good bit about comfort. We're to comfort one another with the love of Christ. That do better, feel better, get better, look better is the siren's call that seduces us. Our churches, our work, and our friendships all join that chorus. Let's consider the invitation of a good God to be comforted. There's comfort for the weary, there's comfort for the regretful, and there's comfort for the fearful. Those are the three we'll talk about tonight. We're comforted so that we can be image bearers, a comfort to a world in pain. Comfort is never an end in and of itself. We are comforted, and so we are launched into a hurting world to comfort. It is my desire to be a bold voice of comfort in your life. When we ignore this desire for comfort from God and from his people, I believe we seek comfort in the wrong places. Isaiah 40 says this, comfort. Oh, comfort my people, says your God. Speak kindly to Jerusalem and call out to her that her warfare has ended, that her iniquity has been removed. And then down to verse 28. Do you not know, have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, does not become weary or tired. His understanding is inscrutable. He gives strength to the weary. And to him who lacks might, he increases power. Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. So my question to you is, what's draining? You like that? I like that picture. What's draining you in this season? Is it the dailiness of your routine? It might be exhausting relationships that you just can't solve. Perhaps you have a really tedious job that doesn't energize you, it just takes from you during the day. It may be that you have a perpetual problem. It's not going to go away, it's going to remain. Can you bear that, and can you find strength from the Lord in the midst of your weariness? Perhaps you're weary from health problems. Perhaps you're weary from trying to maintain your health and running and biking and jumping and flying and all those things. That sometimes that can be exhausting. It's a responsibility. It might be your finances that are exhausting you and making you feel weary. It's interesting, isn't it? If you have one part of your body that hurts, your whole body just aches somehow. If your finances aren't right, you just ache everywhere. If your health isn't right, it's just exhausting. The friends I was with in Arizona were all my age. They were all 58. We had been college friends together. And when I queried them about where they needed comfort, one of the biggest pieces for them was with their aging parents. They were caring for their aging parents. And that's not my experience at this point in time, but that's a heavy weight. There's also the weight of caring for young children, huh? There's the weight of the known and the unknown. Holiness is made of dailiness, of living life as it comes to us. I've heard it said, we don't see things as they are, we see them as we are. So how can we shift who we are as we come to the exhausting places of our lives? Jesus says this, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. I am gentle and humble in heart. You will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Now let me give it to you in the Message translation because I really like how this says it. Same passage. Are you tired? Are you worn out? Are you burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. That's a nice way to live, isn't it? Freely and lightly. Do you want holy rest that's a comfort from God or rest of your own creation? So, sloth, isn't that something? That's a type of rest. Procrastination is also a type of rest, but it delays the inevitable, and it's ultimately unsatisfying. Sloth is another form of rest, but it doesn't bring comfort to you, your soul. So I looked up the sloth and read a few details about the sloth. Don't you? I love that picture. We should maybe just like hold that for the rest of our time. Sloths sleep about 20 hours a day. It is said that they make good habitats for other organisms. And a single sloth may be home to moths, beetles, cockroaches, fungi, ciliates, I'm saying that wrong probably, algae, and they have, this is the best, they have the ability to host symbiotic algae on their furs. So that's an option. If you want to be a sloth, you could do that. It looks cute, but that symbiotic algae just kind of grosses me out. When my stepfather would wake up every morning and he'd sit at the breakfast table, and this is what he would do. He would thank God for the blessedness of refreshing sleep. I love that thought. I think about that almost every morning because some nights aren't even that refreshing for me, but I love that thought of the blessedness of refreshing sleep. So there are some blessings to weariness, and I want to talk about those a minute. There is that appreciation when you do get rest. When you're weary and you get rest, it feels great. When you're weary, it reminds you that you're needy, that you can't do this alone, that God in you is what you need to live this life and flourish. When you're weary, you also slow down sometimes. And maybe that's not so bad. Maybe that's good for your soul. You know, when you're driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour, it's really different than when you're in a traffic jam and you're going 2 miles an hour and you see a lot more things, don't you? It's an opportunity to lighten your load. And I may have mentioned Tommy Paino before to you, but I really love the book written on his life called Heaven's Doorway. And he had Lou Gehrig's disease. And a book was written by Marilyn Ryerson about the end of his life. And he said as he was getting weaker and weaker and less able to do all the things that he'd done for so long, he said, I've realized that I'm carrying too much luggage. And I've opened my suitcase and I've decided to take inventory. And there's really no room left for me to carry pride, arrogance, all these things that I've carried that don't serve me well. And I'm taking them out of my suitcase and I'm lightening my load for the journey ahead. And I love that thought. I'd like to lighten my load. Comfort and rest comes when your load is lighter. So I believe that's worth considering from a man who faced that challenge. There's also burdens and challenges to being dangerously weary. You might get sloppy with yourself. You might get sloppy with others and with God. You know, when you're exercising and working out and you're going a little past that point of close to fatigue, you can get a little messy. There's a time to stop in terms of how many repetitions you're going to do with the weight that you're lifting. You get sloppy. You may be vulnerable to lies when you're dangerously weary. Lies like, God doesn't really care. You're not loved. You're not enough, and I'm the only one. Actually, when you're dangerously weary, it's pretty easy to hurt other people. So, in summary, each of us has our own personalities, and there's right rest for you. It's from God, it's beyond your circumstances, and it can refresh your soul. So that's comfort for the weary. I want to talk now about comfort for the regretful. Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of State under Kennedy and Johnson, came to regret his advice regarding our involvement in the Vietnam War. He said, "Although we sought to do the right thing and believed we were doing the right thing, in my judgment, hindsight proves us wrong." That happens. It's happened to me where I thought, we're doing the right thing. Like, this is right. This is where we should go. And the results didn't work out. And you're left with those questions. Was it the wrong thing? Did I not hear God right? Where am I? And that is a really hard place to be, in that place of regret. I would just challenge you and say, can your faith bear that? Can your faith be big enough for that ambiguity? Can you get unstuck knowing that what seemed right then now seems wrong? Too many people die on the sword of coulda, shoulda, woulda. And they lie dead for the next 40 years of their lives. Sometimes clarity is just hard to come by. It's not until later that we're out of the tangled mess that embroiled us that we see things for what they truly are. Maybe you're stuck in your past. Augustine has good advice for that. He says, trust the past to his mercy, trust the present to his grace, and trust the future to his providence. Actually, it boils down to this. Can you believe he makes all things new? Can you believe what Romans 8 states, that in all things, God works together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes? As a spiritual director, I hear lots of stories. one person has been going through very hard things recently, and they're clinging to Christ in new ways. They say, where have I been all my life? Am I just now truly a Christian? She's sad that she lamely lived the Christian life for all the years that she did. She has regret for that. When I was a chaplain, I may have mentioned to some of you that I went in the room of a 94-year-old man who asked his wife to leave. He'd called for me. And when she left, he said, I've been a failure at everything I've ever done. I've been a failure. And it was such an interesting conversation. It's probably the most impactful of that whole time of being a chaplain for me. And what I was able to say and what I would say to you is you are not done. From now until the day you die, you have the chance to live a different legacy. And God wants to be with you in that. What if Paul had been paralyzed by his past? Forgetting what lies behind, he pressed on. He said in Philippians 3, 12 to 14, I press on so that I may lay hold of that which I was also laid hold of by Christ. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it, yet one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of Christ. What is it that you need to forget? What do you need to forgive in others, and what do you need to forgive in yourself? Many of you have told me, and I can tell you, there is comfort in letting go. Just let it go. There's comfort in knowing that God is bigger than that. 1 Timothy 1 says this. This is also from the Message. Here's a word you can take to heart and depend on. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners. I'm proof, public sinner number one, of someone who could never have made it apart from sheer mercy. And now he shows me off, evidence of his endless patience to those who are right on the edge of trusting him forever. Here's my summary statement for those who are regretful. I'm going to say it slowly and carefully because I want you to get it. Live knowing that you are more than the sum of your good or bad decisions. Live knowing that you are more than the sum of your good or bad decisions. There's also comfort for those who are fearful. Hinds Feet on High Places by Hannah Hernard is the story of Much Afraid and her journey away from her fearing family in the valley of humiliation into the high places of the shepherd, guided by her two companions, sorrow and suffering. It's an allegory of the Christian life towards maturity and its circuitous path. We step into the middle of the story that says this. In all that great desert, there was not a single green thing growing, neither tree, nor flower, nor plant, save here and there a patch of straggly gray cacti. On the last morning, Much Afraid was walking near the tents and huts of the desert dwellers, when in a lonely corner, behind a wall, she came upon a little golden yellow flower growing all alone. An old pipe was connected with a water tank. In the pipe was one tiny hole through which came an occasional drop of water. Where the drops fell one by one, there grew the little golden flower. Though where the seed had come from, Much Afraid could not imagine, for there were no birds anywhere and no other growing things. She stopped over the lonely, lovely little golden face, lifted up so hopefully and so bravely to the feeble drip, and cried out softly, "What is your name, little flower? For I never saw one like you before." The tiny plant answered at once, in a tone as golden as itself, "Behold me. My name is Acceptance with Joy." Much Afraid thought of the things which she had seen. Somehow the answer of the little golden flower which grew all alone in the waste of the desert stole her heart and echoed there faintly and sweetly, filling her with comfort. She said to herself, "The shepherd has brought me here when I did not want to come for his own purpose. I too will look up into his face and say, behold me, I am your little handmaiden, Acceptance with Joy." Acceptance with Joy is a walk of trust, and it is a remedy for your fears. For some of us, we are afraid because we know what we've done. You ever been a little kid and you know what you've done? Or you see one of your kids and you call them and they're just standing there and there's just guilt all over their face. When our daughter Liesl was little, she wrote her name. She was the oldest. She wrote her name on the wall backwards, L-I-E-S-E-L. And I called everyone together and I said, "Who wrote on the wall?" And she said, "The crooks did it." You know, no, there were no crooks and nobody else could write. It was Liesl that had written her name on that wall. And there's a look on your face when you know you've done it. And so we know what we've done, some of us, and we're just waiting for God to get us. We make God into our own small image on this one, because actually it's us who are the unforgiving. We are the ones who we dish out what we perceive others deserve. God is not this. Jesus' agony also comforts us. If it's not true for these moments of your life where our fears could consume us, then it's not for us. He gets us. We also see Mary in the Magnificat. I'm sorry, this slide's going to sit here for a little while. You can ignore it now. Most angelic visitations are prefaced with the words, "Fear not." It can be a fearful thing to encounter such beings. Upon hearing from the angel Gabriel that she will conceive and bear the Holy One within her, she says in Luke 1, "How will this be since I am a virgin?" And the angel answered her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be called Holy, the Son of God. And behold, your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has also conceived a son. And this is the sixth month with her who was called barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." And Mary said, "Behold, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word." And the angel departed. She may as well have been that little flower, right? Acceptance with Joy. Fear did not have sway here. She knew who she believed in. It was her desire to serve God. And she accepted the highly improbable as her life's calling. Here's how I see things. Fear based in past experiences has misunderstood your story. Fear that's in your present forgets that death has been conquered. And fear of the future ignores who holds the future. I'm going to say that again. Fear based on your past experiences has misunderstood your own story. And you may need to spend time with somebody and spend time with the Lord to look at your story. Fear in the present forgets that the victory's already been won and death has been conquered. Fear of the future ignores your loving Father who holds the future. He has his plans for you and you are safe. Some of us just give fear too much sway in our life. Both fear and regret are reflected, I love this, in the fact that the New York Times number one article from 2016, which was written by Alain de Botton, was entitled, Why You Will Marry the Wrong Person. Number one, above Brexit, above everything about the refugees, above the elections. Why is that? He was so surprised, and he said, I wasn't just number one. I was number one by a long shot. Why you will marry the wrong person. He thought next he'd write, why you're going to take the wrong job, why you're going to have the wrong children. You know, maybe he'll keep going with that theme, but I think we need solace and comfort. And our society is kind of about optimism, and we're oppressed by the need to be perfect. Articles like this console people. We will make mistakes. We will have regrets. Maybe most couples look at each other at some point in time and kind of wonder or regret, like, the rest of our life, are we going to do this? God is bigger than our regrets. He's bigger than our fears and our limits in life and in love. Isaiah 41:10 says this, Do not fear, I am with you. Do not anxiously look about you. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will help you. Because nothing will separate you from the love of God. Take heart. It's not so much about us seeking God as He sought us. All of our rituals and all of our ways are a reminder that God is with us. He is doing a work in us. Finally, Philippians 4 says this. Don't fret or worry. Instead of worrying, pray. Let petitions and praises shape your worries into prayers, letting God know your concerns. And before you know it, a sense of God's wholeness, everything coming together for good, will come and settle you down. It's wonderful what happens when Christ displaces worry at the center of your life. I pray for you that you have an increasing awareness of God's comfort for your life that roots you in peace, no matter what the days ahead may hold.